Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Welcome to today's episode, where I'm joined by two of my favourite people in the British fragrance world, Pia Long and Nick Gilbert, the wonderfully opinionated, fiercely intelligent, unfiltered, and utterly lovely founders of All Fiction. All Fiction offers bespoke perfumery and consultancy for perfume and home fragrance brands and industry bodies. They are also the creative minds behind their own range, Bougie Bougie Fragrances. I've known Nick and Pia for a while, and I can confidently say that they embody everything that's great about the independent British fragrance world. Hailing from Finland, Pia Long is a powerhouse perfumer with a razor-sharp perspective on the fragrance industry. Blending her early passion for writing, she was published at the age of 9, with decades of hands-on experience across every facet of the industry, making her a key voice in perfumery today. Nick Gilbert, All Fiction's creative director, is a fragrance trainer, evaluator, and marketer with unmatched expertise in brand development and consumer engagement. Known for his sharp insights and lively presence on BBC Radio, Nick's thoughtful approach and depth of knowledge make him a go-to consultant for brands eager to make their mark in the fragrance world. As we chat, you'll quickly see why these two are so in demand. They're busy, brilliant, and unafraid to tell it like it is. In fact, Nick had to dash off towards the end of our conversation for a client meeting, which is testament to how sought after their expertise is. So I'm thrilled to have them here today to dive into their journey, the art of fragrance, and what it means to stand out in an ever-evolving industry. I hope you enjoy. Thank you both so much for being on the podcast. Obviously, I know you both fairly well, but for those who don't, why scent and how did you get into the world of perfumery?
I started out selling perfume when I was a teenager. I was planning to end up working sort of in rehabilitation for people with addiction issues. Didn't really like it and kind of saw that people don't really get better because of the way the system's set up. So continued selling perfume after I graduated. And then was like, actually, I'm really good at this and I really like this and I don't want to move away from perfume, but how do I make it more than being on the shop floor? Like my sort of exposure at that point was people do training. So maybe I could go and do training or something like that. And then I kind of found my way into sort of niche perfumery. So I ended up at Les Senteurs in London, and then sort of through various jobs and roles at Penmalkins as well, working on, you know, marketing, storytelling, fragrance development, social media, window displays, blah, 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 blah. So like basically doing literally everything. Yeah. Fragrance. And I was like, I just love this so much. I don't think I can possibly imagine working with anything that's not fragrance.
And what did you love about it so much? What was it that really got to you?
So I think one, that it's kind of like it's invisible communication. We're saying something with fragrance, or perfumers are saying something when they've created fragrance, or brands are saying something when they've created fragrance, and someone can read it and understand it. And I think it was probably kind of like having the realization that a story could be told through fragrance really effectively and efficiently was kind of like, this was the turning point. This was, I've fallen in love with this medium and I don't think I want to do anything else ever. So yeah, I think it was that, basically, that kind of idea of scent storytelling combined, because I've always loved writing and stories, and combination of storytelling through fragrance has always fascinated me and been the thing that I've really enjoyed.
And there's so much scope for it in perfume as well, which I feel like brands still aren't taking advantage of it, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Actually, just to add to that, I think the problem is more that brands are too risk averse to move away from the stories that have been told about perfume decades ago. And so they wish to repeat the stories because they're still stories, even if they're talking about, oh, a woman is not a woman without a perfume, or...
Don't get me started.
all of that, right? So those are still a type of story. And it's just that brands are scared, or they don't want to take the risk. They think they will spook the consumer. They don't have the imagination. They don't have the people on board with the talent to tell the stories in a modern way and think, let's rip all this apart and start again. all those play into the idea that we do stand apart because we've decided to start from a more authentic position to begin with, and not just repeat old tropes.
Mm.
And by we, anyway, you mean old fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How I got started was similarly, and this was such a sort of serendipitous meeting with Nick and myself, because we have a spookily similar origin story, if you think cartoon villains. Mm-hmm. I was also studying something completely different. I was studying languages, and everybody thought I was going to be either a translator, interpreter, or a writer. And indeed, I had been writing for publication since I was 9 years old, which was really the result of my mum deciding to send off my writings to a magazine, and then the magazine turning up with my story printed in
Amazing.
It.
Amazing.
The rest is history. And so I obviously thought this is going to be my career, and everyone else thought so too. And then it's quite cruel sometimes to make young people choose so early yeah. in their life. This is going to be my life, and then go to uni and study a topic. I went to uni in Finland, then immediately realized it wasn't for me. And so I only spent 1 year in uni, and I came over to UK. And while I had been in school, while I'd been in uni, I had been selling perfume. So very parallel origin story. And through various adventures, I ended up in London College of Fashion. I graduated as a film, theatre, TV, makeup artist and a wig dresser. But while I was building that career, I then had to supplement my income by working in cosmetics and fragrance. And so I then from there ended up thinking, this is not acceptable. I want to make a much more deliberate career effort here. And so I became a training manager for a fragrance importer and distributor. And then after a couple of years of that, I felt that I didn't really know where else to go. And I felt really inspired by fragrance. And there was this pivotal moment when somebody from Tiffany Fragrances came in with this very theatrical piece of a perfumer's organ, which was actually this absolutely ridiculous piece of theatre, this sort of a wooden case with natural absolutes and essential oils and things like that. And they were saying, these are the ingredients that go into a Tiffany perfume. And even at that point, I thought, are they? But then I got curious and I started researching and I found some books. There were not many resources at the time. We're talking 30 years ago. And then went to work as a training manager in a different trade. But then I came back to fragrance when I realized that I could find a route in through a company who makes their own fragrances in-house, and perhaps I could learn how to create perfumes and fragrances for products through work experience and through sort of working my way up there. And that's exactly what happened.
And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you guys both meet, and how did you get the idea for Old Fiction? How did all that come about?
Mm.
What is the villain origin story for that?
The old fiction origin story. Pia says like 10 years. It's more than 10 years, but it's kind of one of those things. Pia and Grant from Base Notes had arranged a sort of meetup day in London for a whole bunch of perfume lovers. And so people from all over the country, internationally, everyone sort of like traveled in. And I remember Pia was speaking and I was kind of like, oh, she's cool, she knows things. And then throughout the day, we just kind of like migrated together. We were in the same group, if you like, and we migrated together and we just got chatting and we had a good rapport. We had like a sort of instant forever friendship, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I remember we were in Les Santer.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Pia explain like how a jasmine accord could be constructed. And I was like, ooh, wait, this is like super interesting. And I was like, oh, she's really cool. I'm glad I've met her, kind of thing. And we stayed in touch and sort of like did our sort of separate paths in the fragrance trade. Pia was like a perfumer, or like early stages of being a perfumer at the
point. Yeah, because I went from when we met, I was still working at Lush. Yeah. And then I went from there to work for two further companies.
Yeah.
And as perfumer and then something else.
Yeah. Because
the companies I worked for were so small after Lush that I had to have another job as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were so small. So kind of family businesses.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, we just kept in touch, and then we would do sort of like meetups ourselves. Yeah. Or Pia would say something like, "Oh, I've not smelled anything new recently," and I was like, "Okay, come to London, let's go and smell everything."
Yeah.
And we would do that, and then we arranged a couple of meetup groups, so
that's
we got
right,
a whole
yeah.
bunch of
we
perfume
used to do
stuff.
tours of London perfumeries
Yeah.
together for a bit. Yeah.
So we did that, and then 8 and a bit years ago, we both were sort of like coming to the end of our contracts and realizing we didn't necessarily want to sort of carry on with where we were. And then Pia interviewed me for Perfumer and Flavorist, talking about the evaluator role because she was writing at the time. And we just got sort of like chatting, and we were both deciding to freelance at the same time. And then jokingly, after several gin and tonics, sort of said, maybe one day we'll start a business together. And then 3 months later, we had a client that had approached me that also required everything that Pia could do, because we were getting approached by a lot of clients that wanted us for the same thing effectively, but they were approaching us separately, not knowing that we were working, like not working together, but in very close contact. So it kind of be like, hi, I've had this query from this company, and they, oh yeah, me too. So it became very sort of like natural that we would work together. And so we found this client approached us, they needed Pia. I left the meeting, rang Pia and said, so we've got to start a business because they need us. And then the next thing, Old Fiction was born.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly after that.
Amazing.
And we were really fortunate. I will have to say in the beginning, we were fortunate in that we didn't have to suffer some of the things that a lot of typical startups have to suffer, which is to find customers, find when your profit's going to come from, build a reputation, do a lot of marketing, do cold calling. We didn't have to do any of that because we'd already been active in the fragrance trade and with exactly the types of businesses and people that we then wanted to work for as a business entity. We already had a reputation. And so we kept getting business through referral and word of mouth. And also our initial client kept us pretty busy for the first few months, where we were pretty occupied fully there anyway. And actually, we had a really nice growth trajectory until the pandemic hit, and then unfortunately, a huge proportion of our business at that time was to help retailers, and of course that took a huge hit during the pandemic. But we've sort of survived that, and we're now on a different growth path. And actually, these days, perfumery is easily over half of our business. We weren't quite sure how much perfumery would represent, perfumery for other brands, that is, and other companies, how much that would really come to occupy our business. But I'm delighted to say that I now get to be almost a full-time perfumer, because of course we do have other jobs and other tasks.
Yeah, but, you're a co-business owner, so there's stuff to pick up that's not just not just formulating.
And Pierre, so you're the perfumer, and then Nick, as an evaluator, for those who aren't familiar with the concept, you are kind of the bridge between the perfumer and the client, but also providing creative input. Would you say that's a fair analysis of what you do?
Yeah, that's a very succinct way of putting it. That's spot on. It's kind of like, if you think about it, almost like a translator between the client and the perfumer. That's effectively what I'm doing, because I'm going and like client and consumer language to perfumery language and then back again a lot of the time. So I have to be able to exist within those two languages.
Yeah, and he also acts as almost like an editor would to an author. He would never come and tell me, write that specific sentence, but he would read a chapter and say, the character motivation in this scene doesn't make any sense. And then I'd have to go, oh, yeah. I would say it's hard to become good at what Nick does, because you have to have so many different types of skills to be able to do it. It's psychological, it's diplomatic, it's about communication.
Extremely diplomatic.
It's about understanding how perfumers work, but then understanding the commercial realities of the actual fragrance marketplace and trends, and how to talk to clients diplomatically, how to tease out of the clients what they really want. And, you know, where there's been times when I would just go, I don't know. Nick's been able to arrive at a way to move a project forward that might have been a bit stuck. And of course, sometimes we get wonderful situations, which we adore. Please send more of those our way, where the client more or less trusts our vision and trusts us to be the creators in such a way that they will come with a brand concept or an idea that's already really fully formed and already has a really understandable universe and understandable motives, understandable narratives about itself. And it's therefore very clear to us what they wish to communicate. And then they leave the perfumery to us almost so that they might give us a very broad idea of what they're looking for, and a broad idea of this is who it's for, and then let us do a lot of the creative work. So there's been one specific project which was quite major recently where Nick actually came up with the briefs as well. And so he got to do a lot more creativity than typical. But we worked in really close contact with the client, and it's been a really wonderful
it's been great, wonderful
relationship.
Really cool. I can't wait for them to come up.
Yeah, so
that's been great, and so that's unusual, but you know, Nick does get to do quite a lot of creative work as well.
Because with a lot of perfume brands, a lot of the founders, we won't name which ones, like to claim they're the perfumer. But really, when you think about it, they're, I'm sure we could talk for ages about this, but really they're kind of the evaluator.
Not even that, actually. They're more of a figurehead.
Yeah, and then claiming, so you could kind of maybe suggest creative director. Maybe
depends who it is. In some cases you might say, okay, creative director, and there is some creative input, there is some genuine direction and genuine interaction. In many cases it's more cynical than that, and it is very much fraud. It's just fraudulent, and you're fraudulently claiming that you're the nose when you're not. It's frustrating, but it's tailors all this time. As long as perfumery has existed, these people and brands have existed. And there's been ghost perfumers behind the scenes. So it's nothing new. And it's just the case that that's just how things are marketed. But the sort of the positive side of that is that the fraudulent perfumers are maybe not able to carry that story convincingly. Some of them can, because they're very good at being...
smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, they're very good at being sort of performers. But any more detailed questioning or topics and the whole facade falls apart. So it is frustrating. I used to be much more annoyed about it when I was a student perfumer, because it was so hard. And I remember I used to be really frustrated, like, how dare you claim that you're a perfumer when you haven't put any of this effort in. And now I'm much more whatever, because the work speaks for itself, the truth comes out eventually.
Like you say, consumers can sniff it out, pun intended.
You know, eventually it all balances itself out. And also it doesn't take anything away from us that these brands and people exist.
Yeah.
Because we have actually been approached by a couple where they're wanting us to do their ghost perfumery, and we turn them away. So that's also quite satisfying.
Why do you think so much of this bullshit kind of exists in the perfume industry in particular? Because there does seem to be so much smoke and mirrors in our industry.
I've got a ton of thoughts. But primarily, I think one of the difficult things is that fragrance is really difficult for people to understand to the level you need to understand it in order to sort of be able to think about it and talk about it effectively. So one of the aspects of it is the fragrance trade has always kind of obscured itself and kept itself hidden in secrecy. That's partially out of necessity, because there's not any copyright or protection for perfumery. And
it's not a visual product, so anyone can pick off a scent. And
we have zero protection. Yeah. And actually, I currently have, they're the brand currently out there who's selling copies of my fragrances. Which I don't want to go into, but it really frustrates me. And there's nothing you can do about it. Home fragrances, I should add, not our perfumes, but there's no protection. So of course there is a necessity, because there isn't the same sort of copyright as there would be for a piece of music, for artwork, for a book.
And then on top of that, the fragrance trade has also benefited quite a lot from that obfuscation. What they'll do is sort of like reel off a notes list that sounds like it's full of exquisite naturals, and it might well have them all in there, but it doesn't mean that they're in there at a level that is what a consumer might imagine based on what they're told about what a notes list or a fragrance is made of.
A lot of us think those are the actual things inside the perfume, like a bubble gum.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, where did they get the bubblegum essence? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I sort of, one of the analogies I say is, you know, would you be able to build a house based on an estate agent's description of it? And so that's sort of the comparison between a notes list. Notes list is something that describes, but it's not the formula, it's not the ingredients list. And you might describe a set of 10 ingredients as one line on a notes list. And it does help for a type of storytelling. Notes list is a type of storytelling too. But then it can also be confusing and it can be used deliberately to mislead. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a gray area, you know. How many people do really know what vetiver smells like? How many people?
Yeah,
really
or tonka
know?
Bean. Like what? You know,
yeah, never seen a tonka bean.
So if you put that in, and then of course it gets even more complicated because if there's a really popular note, something like sandalwood, which mostly might not be listed in a fragrance that contains any real sandalwood, or if there is any real sandalwood used, it's used at a very small level for lots of reasons, for cost, for the fact that sandalwood oil, it's on its own, doesn't lift that much, so of course you have to then do things to it to lift it and whatever. But let's face it, a lot of popular sandalwood themed perfumes don't have any or have very little sandalwood in them. And then if the consumer sees sandalwood as a note and they haven't associated with a specific sandalwood perfume, they then assume that's what sandalwood smells like. So now it's even more scrambled because they don't actually know what sandalwood smells like. So how useful are notes lists really? And they can even put people off. We were talking about this yesterday. So if, you know, for either of us, if you list coconut as a note, we'll go, no, thank you, that's not for me. But what if the coconut is there at a subtle level, perhaps it's been used to enhance a gardenia accord, and now we'd be really into it. And if it doesn't smell like coconut cocktail, then we'd love it. And so notes list would work similarly to consumers. If they have disliked notes, they might be put off. And turns out actually they would have loved that fragrance. So they're a bit of a double-edged sword. They can help with sales, especially online. They can help with marketing. They can help with priming, but they're for sure.
But they're not all the facts.
Yeah.
But is there an ideal way of talking about scent that will genuinely convey what the thing actually smells like? Because it's just an eternal puzzle, because you can never truly convey what something smells like in words.
I'll
never
you
know what a perfume smells
like. But
you
actually can't, because it's so individual how we interpret the incoming smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because smells don't actually exist as such. Sorry.
This one again. She did this once in a training session and I nearly had a heart attack. She's like, smells don't exist. Okay, bye.
Mic drop. I said what I said. So,
I'm going to melt that.
Smells are the creation of your brain in response to a chemical stimuli going up your olfactory nerve. So if you sit with that for a while, there's a whole hour-long talk about this to follow if we go deep into it. But let's just say that because of our biology, because of our uniqueness of our selection of olfactory receptors, because of the enzymes in our nasal mucosa that already start digesting any molecules that go up our nose, because of our personal smellscapes that we have from childhood, even from when we were in the womb, the foods that our mother ate will have affected what aromas we're exposed to and what we detect and at what level, what we eat for breakfast, what culture we're embedded in, our health status, our age, our hormones, what medication we might be taking. All of these things, our mood, the context within which we smell a smell. Are we in a blue room or a yellow room?
Yeah.
There's so much that affects how the smell forms in our head, what shape our brain decides to present with us, what pattern our brain recognizes. You can talk in broad terms. So you can say, this is a citrus perfume, or this is a spicy perfume. And that in itself is already more helpful than a notes list. And you can say, this is a very potent perfume with a really sour fruit note. Okay, that's helpful. Notes lists, not so helpful. Complete abstraction, kind of evocative, but not so helpful.
Yeah.
So it's trying to create some sort of hook between all these different facets and give you a broad idea of what world am I about to step into. And then ultimately, the customer will still have their own personal journey through their personal experience. And there might be something that I've decided to create that, in my view, is a specific scene or specific fruit or specific smell. Might have even used the literal material sometimes. So I might think, oh, well, you know, this is a perfume with an aspect of coffee, and I might have actually used some coffee absolute, you know, whatever. Doesn't matter if the customer smells it and it reminds me of them, a specific aunt or specific moment in their life, that's forever going to be that smell for them. They'll recognize that pattern and it'll forever be, oh yeah, it was that situation, or it's my ex, or you know.
Yeah. And can we talk a bit about kind of, you know, on the topic of this, like storytelling in general when it comes to perfumery? Because I really was interested in what you were saying right at the beginning about how kind of a lot of perfume brands are very like reticent to kind of veer away from the traditional storytelling method. Do you think if they were, then we could find a way to better explain how things smell in a way that the consumer can understand? Although you were saying it is very subjective how we interpret different scents. Do you think it would be more effective?
So I have to say something here, and I know Nick will have lots to say on this, but I've got to say something. We are in danger of assuming that it is in the best interest of most mainstream brands to explain how their perfumes truly smell. It's a bold assumption, given that a lot of perfumes... given that a lot of perfumes out there actually require this extra razzle dazzle, celebrities advertising fancy bottles, aspirational marketing associated to a luxury brand, a lot of things and bells and whistles in order for a consumer to accept what's effectively a very sort of safe or
focus group
to death, kind of a nice smell. You know, it's expertly formulated. It is very skillfully blended. It is done by utmost professionals. But because a lot of brands are so risk averse, and because a lot of mainstream perfumes have to launch in lots of different markets and lots of different retail doors straight away, they are even more so than 20, 30 years ago now, scared to take that step. There's been a few notable exceptions, especially Gucci and a couple of other brands lately, but they're scared to do something a little bit outrageous or novel, and everyone is trying to do just another iteration of a familiar theme. And so, you know... Would it be
in the brand's best interest to go, well, we've done Fracas 2.0.
It's like, oh well, we've done another La Vie Belle.
Yeah,
we've done another Angel Derogation with a modern twist. We've copied Polo Ralph Lauren, but we've added this new ingredient. You know, that's the thing. It's like we're assuming it would be in their best interest to talk about their perfumes in a more
accurate,
realistic, evocative, reflective storytelling ways, because it's a sort of a different world. There's a Venn diagram between what they do and what we do, but we're not entirely in business.
I think it's why the massive part of growth is in the niche sector.
I was going to come to that, exactly.
Because realistically, kind of effectively what's like a Me Too launch for mass market brands, it happens a lot. It's, you know, it's not controversial to say that happens. It's realistic.
It's realistic.
But I think that's what's driving a lot of consumers to seek out more niche creative fragrances, because they're like, okay, well, this is actually potentially a novel thing that I've never smelled before.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they're trying to communicate an actual story. They're trying to tell me something through this fragrance rather than I will smell nice and that will get me laid.
Like, people don't want to smell like everyone else as well. They want their own kind of unique signature.
Exactly. So what Pia said is right. For the mass market and designer brands, potentially that's not what they want to do and it's not in their best interest. But I think for a lot of niche brands, and especially sort of creative, independently owned brands, it is in their interest to do this.
Yes.
It is in their interest to do this, because what they want is to go, here is my intent. Here is what I've set out to create, or we have set out to create in this fragrance. If it's a perfumer owned brand, then it's what I did. If it's a collaboration with a perfumer, then it's what we did. Here's what we set out to create. Here's the emotion we want to express and convey. Here's the sensation we want to convey. Here is the story we want to tell. You prime people to then experience it in the way that you've told them you would like them to experience it.
Yeah.
And as Pia mentioned, of course there's going to be outliers. Of course there's going to be sort of like realistic situations where people have such differences in their perception, they're going to go, absolutely not. But, you know, you can very much set a scene with the way that you talk about the fragrance, the description you write for it, etc. And as long as that actually aligns
yes.
with what you're smelling,
yeah.
with what you've created,
yeah.
then it works really well. And it's really efficient way of talking about fragrance and kind of communicate. Like, I remember that writing a fragrance about the story of the journey of a ship, you know, and it actually had all of those nuances and effects in the fragrance. So when people heard that story and smelled the fragrance, they actually felt like, okay, yeah, I can believe it. But if I'd done that and it just smelled like lemons, they would be like, what are you on about? It's lemons.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to have this alignment. The story needs to make sense. The description, the things that you're deciding to focus on from the notes list need to make sense. Mm. It all needs to align for the end user, for the consumer, the customer, the person who's going to wear and love this fragrance, so that it makes sense. Because otherwise, and another thing that happens is if you've got all that aligned, people perceive it as being better quality.
Yeah.
People perceive it as being worth the money, all of those things.
Yeah.
So it's worth doing. It enhances
your experience of it. Kind of what you were saying, Pia, about how, like, you know, smell is very subjective. And if you've got that, you know, Nick's amazing story about the different components of a ship, and then you smell it, you're getting a better experience, aren't you? With
exactly. And it might still be a different ship in your imagination, or you might experience some of those facets differently, but you now find the whole thing at least believable. And whether you like it or not, whether you relate to it or not, what it reminds you of or not is a sort of a different aside. It doesn't actually change the fact that you've created a believable story. Are you building a believable world? Are you describing it in a way that actually relates to the customer experience?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the reason kind of these bigger brands are so scared, as you were saying, is because we have such a strong reaction to smell more than any other sense? You know, you can smell something and be like, oh my God, I'm back in my childhood home. Or you'd be like, I need to run for the nearest open window. That's disgusting. Like, do you think because you have...
I don't think it's that sophisticated. I think it's to do with being risk averse, with people who are in charge of budgets and in charge of sales targets and in charge of return of investment for investors are so keen to try to create a winnable, predictable formula that's going to make them their money.
Yeah.
And they are so worried about having to spend a lot of budget on launching a fragrance globally and then it flops in 2 years and they will have wasted all that effort. They want to create another, and this is the irony, they want to create another Chanel No. 5 or Angel,
but without the risk
so you have to actually take a risk. You have to actually be prepared that it will flop. You have to prepare that maybe you were ahead of your time, but then sometimes you get a success story and sometimes you have something that has this tenacity and just captures people's imagination. And one of the really difficult things for a perfumer and a brand on that risk-taking is to find that exact sweet spot between introducing some kind of smell that people already know, so people can kind of hook onto a pattern that's already in their brain. I recognize something here. So with Angel, it was like, oh, this smells like sweeties, it smells like candy floss, it smells like fruit, it smells like chocolate. So those were smells that were recognized, but no one had ever put those together with everything that was in the fragrance. And so that was the novel part, and the dosage and the power and the projection of that fragrance. The total accord was completely novel, and it started a whole new fragrance family. The Gourmand fragrance family was really started by Angel.
Yeah.
So that's the risk, is then doing something new with it.
What made you decide the time was right to create your own line?
So we originally set out to spend the majority of our time and our first few years in business exclusively creating for other people. And there were lots of reasons for that. One of the main reasons is that most people don't know, but we had seen firsthand what it takes to really start a brand. And we knew that it is such a hungry animal. It really consumes you. You have to put so much of yourself into it. It requires constant maintenance, constant reinvestment. It becomes the focus for you in such a way that we didn't want to start our business with a brand. We wanted to continue the kind of work we had already been doing. So just transferring our skills in providing services and creativity and perfumery for others, but into our own business shell, if you like. And that really, I think, was the right decision, because even now, even with all these years, it's still really tough. And we did get hit by Brexit. which affected the import of our components. We got hit by the pandemic and all kinds of things. But initially, the candles idea seemed at the time like the right thing to do, because we were working with a candle manufacturer who was offering us a really good deal on manufacturing the product. We were providing them a bunch of services, and we therefore had a really good opportunity to start our own candle brand. And I had also developed quite a lot of expertise in creating candle fragrances. At that point, I think it wouldn't even be an exaggeration to say that I had created several hundred candle fragrances for other brands. So therefore, we thought, well, why not put this expertise to use? And it provided us with a really interesting playground to tell our stories through fragrance and through actual writing, and the cheeky, exuberant joy in becoming good at what you've really strive to get good at. It really came through in the stories and the fragrances in for us, and we really enjoyed it. Then what started to happen is that people who were really into our candles started contacting us and saying, when are you going to do this as a perfume? Or famously, one of my friends said, so I've just put this queer culture candle wax on my skin because I really want to wear it. And I said, don't do that.
Oh my gosh.
So that was really, I think, the final straw. And in fact, queer was the first fragrance which I then redeveloped from a candle to a perfume. And we realized that, yeah, maybe we're ready to have a perfume brand. And then we decided to create different versions of each fragrance because it was, first of all, a different format. So Eau de Toilette, Eau de Parfum, different format in the first place, but also we didn't want to be literally, oh yeah, they're the candle, they're the fragrance versions of the candle scents. We didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. We wanted to use the candle fragrances as a jumping off point, as the point of inspiration, and then create something more complex and more evolving and more suitable for skin in perfume form. And that is the side that we're really excited about. That's the side that's growing really rapidly. We have two new fragrances ready, one of which has been already announced in Exance this spring. That should hopefully come out this autumn in Flerno. And then there's one other fragrance just ready, which we'll reveal next year. And then there's a third one I'm working on as well. So we have lots of ideas and lots of work in progress for the Eau de Bougie.
Exciting times. And what is the kind of brand story behind both the candles and the fragrances, and how did you sort of come up with that? Because I think it's a great brand story, and I love the kind of the names of the perfumes and how it all comes together. And obviously you guys are the experts when it comes to like weaving storytelling around perfume. So
we wanted to come from a place of irreverent joy, celebration of fragrance, storytelling, fun, and not taking ourselves very seriously, but taking our work incredibly seriously. That's really reflected in the fragrances, and the colourful, sparkly vibrancy of the brand really reflects our personalities and the sort of way in which we like to create if we're left to it without adult supervision.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to have fun with it. We wanted to do it in a joyous way. We didn't want to hold back and do some sort of wallflower fragrances or Bijou Muir. It's really about pushing boundaries, about celebration of self-expression and true diversity, all kinds of values that we really hold very close to our heart. There's really important for us is a degree of checking ourselves against our own values and checking ourselves against our own work and wanting to do things in a really authentic way. And I think our imagination and our enjoyment of the craft and our humour come through in the stories and the fragrances.
Definitely, I would agree with that. And lastly, if somebody was an entrepreneur and wanted to start a fragrance brand, what would be the best advice that you would offer them?
Write a business plan, have enough funds one way or the other so that you can sustain the brand for at least 2 years, possibly more, without making any profit whatsoever. You may have to hold on to a day job or another business that's already in existence while you get your new fragrance brand off the ground. And you have to come up with something that you couldn't just copy paste to another brand. You have to come up with something that is uniquely yours, uniquely interesting, and will clearly communicate what you're about in a really short instance. So if your brand description is very generic and you could just copy and paste your story to literally any other fragrance brand, then you haven't quite got there. And it's also not good enough just to have excellent fragrances. You have to have all the parts working together, because the market is so competitive now. You have to have some sort of unique selling point, some sort of unique story. You have to have great fragrances, but you also have to have packaging that retailers find acceptable. You also have to have the resources to get your products out there in front of consumers, in front of reviewers, in front of the press. And you have to have a lot of tenacity and belief in what you do, and not expect to launch a brand and then you're done. It's much more like you're having a baby and now you have to keep it alive. So those are my main thoughts to anybody wanting to start a brand.
Pia, thank you so much for your time. And please pass on my thanks to Nick as well. I know he had
thank
to.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It's been so lovely chatting with you both. And really looking forward to smelling the new fragrances when they come out.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.